holding on. We're holding on Lammerfest on the days. We actually got to the end, but we may as well go back a little bit and explain where we were holding. We started saying like, the Mishnah had told us that we have a machlokes to shama betilo if you only did one matana of chatas, one application of blood. So the mizbeach is the chatas kosher. The shama says no, but civil says one is enough. The halacha, as usual, is like this. So now we started discussing the question, for those three remain, for one. The question is though, the chachili is supposed to do four matanos. So the question is, the remaining three matanos, what are the dinim that apply to those? In what sense do we say that they're like, that the blood that's supposed to be used for them is like the first one, and in what sense not? So Rav Papa had summarized that like this. You have 12 dinim that apply to blood. For eight of them, we consider the three remaining matanos to be like the first one. And the eight dinim were that all of that if a person does any of them outside the Azari Chayav Karis, all of them have to be done by day, not by night. None of them can be done by a zor. They all have to be done using a kli shareis. They all have to go on the respective corners of the mizbeach. They all have to be done with the finger that he dips the finger in and draws it. Yeah. Because we're going to see there's a few that are daft, and in particular one of them we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about a couple of them where we're not so certain about that. The seventh one was kibbutz, the din that if blood of a chatas spritzes on clothing, then you need to wash it in the azara. So that applies equally well to the blood that was supposed to be for these remaining ones as well. Mm-hmm. And the last one that he said that applies, just like the first one, is shirayim, that if at least one matana was done from a particular keli, then you pour the rest of it on the base of the mizbeach. So in those eight, the case that we had in previous parak where you put the blood in the four different kalim and then you did one matana from each one, all of those are considered shirayim now and they all get poured onto the base of the mizbeach. We don't say that the remaining three, since they're not essential, then those should not be considered like shirayim, they're all considered like shirayim. On the other hand, he said there were four dinim where the remaining three matanas are not like the original one. Namely, that you can do them after the owner of the korban dies, not considered a chatas shemeitzah ba'alei at that point. They don't accomplish anything as far as being matir, the fat to be burnt on the mizbeach and the meat to be eaten, because that was already accomplished by the first matana. They're not capable of causing pigul, because again, pigul only applies during the time, the machshavas foot only applies during the time when it's necessary for the kapara, and once the first one was done, then that's it. And the last one we said was that if the blood after the first one was done was brought into the heichal, the korban does not become kosher. So note in that. So you can't tassel, in other words, after the first matana was done.
So what's the question then?
Well, what do you mean, what's the question? So far, we don't have a question. So far, we have Rav Papa stating that there are those 12 dinim that apply to dam. Eight of them, the last three matanas are like the first one, and in four of them, they're not. So now comes the discussion. So we'll start over from Omer Rav Papa about 10, 12 lines from the bottom. Line begins with Gavori. So Amar Rav Papa, Menon Min Allah, so Rav Papa says, where do I get this idea that in particular when it comes to the kibbutz, when it comes to the din about washing the stained garment in the Azara, where do I get that the remaining three matanas are just like the first one? So blood from the mizrach that was supposed to be used for the second, third, or fourth one splashes on clothing, it would also have to be washed in the Azara. Where do I get that particular detail from?
But it's not the same.
That it is the same.
The last three
are like the first one in that regard. Just like if you had the basin, if you had the mizrach, and none of the matanas had been done yet, and some of it splashed onto clothing, you would definitely have to wash it in the azara. So he says the same thing. If you already did the first matana, and then it splashes, or if you already did two matanas, and then it splashes, or three, as long as you hadn't done all four matanas. Where am I getting that from? Like this, it's not, because we learn in a Mishnah later in our Masechta, when we talk about the dinim of kibbutz. It says over there, like, nitzas min asaver, if the blood splashed directly from the neck of the animal, ala beged, directly onto the clothing, well then such blood is possible, as we learned before, it has to be collected in a kli shareis first. Therefore, ain atoron kibbutz, such blood does not have to be washed off specifically in the azara. Mina keren, mina yisoid, and also continues the Mishnah, if the blood splashed off the keren, off the corner of the mizbeach, or off the yisoid, also ain atoron kibbutz, also it doesn't have to be washed. Now, Rav Papa says the implication is homer roi lekeren. Apparently, the implication is only because the blood was already on the keren, the mitzvah was already accomplished with it. It was placed on the keren, and then it splashed off from there onto clothing. Only then do you not have to wash it, implying homer roi lekeren. But if you have blood in the mizrach, which is supposed to be placed on the keren, namely for the second or third or fourth matana, apparently toh and kibbles. Apparently, that if that blood splashes on clothing, you would need to wash it in the azara.
Okay.
So you see from that that the second, third, and fourth are like the first one in that regard. Okay, the Gemara asks, so the Lipai Meich, that doesn't work though, because according to your Svara, he should have to learn the next part of the Mishnah the same way. Mina Yisoid ain't a Torah and Kibbutz. You would say that the Mishnah is saying that if the blood was already on the Yisoid, and then it splashed off there, you don't have to wash the clothing in the Azara. Homina Royli Yisoid Torah and Kibbutz. What do you mean though? Does that imply that if you have, so all four Matanas were done, let's say. Now the remainder of the blood in the Mizrach is just supposed to be poured on the Yisoid. Are you telling me the Mishnah would also be implying that that blood remaining in the Mizrach, which is ready to be poured on the Yisoid, that if some of it splashed on clothing, you should have to wash it in the Azara? Can't.
I should write to the Karen.
Right. The same implication. If you're right, if you're telling me that Karen means that there's a distinction between whether it was on the Karen or whether it's ready to be placed on the Karen, you would have to say the same thing as far as the Yisoid. But the problem with that is, I should use it. The pasuk says that the blood will be sprinkled, implying prafozesh karhoza, implying as opposed to this case where all the sprinkling was already done, and therefore that the blood, the shirayim now that's in the mizrach, if it splashes on clothing, does not have to be washed in the azara. So you see that when it comes to the yisoid, there's no such distinction. With the blood that's meant to go on the yisoid, there's no such distinction between whether it's ready to go on the yisoid or whether it already went on the yisoid. Either way, you don't have to wash it in the azara. So why should we assume to make such an inference when it comes to the keren? And in fact, if you're going to... No. Asher yizeh, anyway, is the expression. Asher yizeh, that it will be sprinkled. Yizeh would also be future tense. It would just be passive instead of active.
Yizeh would be future tense, passive. So how would you say...
If you want to say nizeh, huzo, or whatever, you would have to say yes. Right, but whatever, you have a yud there, so it's clearly not. And Rashi explains that the next few words are the continuation of the question. If you're going to tell me that the Mishnah is distinguishing, in the case of the Yisoid, between blood that's supposed to be placed on the Yisoid versus blood that's already placed there, that can only be Hamani Rav Nechemia. Then that can only work according to Rav Nechemia.
It's not
the Chachamim. And so how can Rav Papa use that as a proof? Tznan, as we learn in a Mishnah near the end of our Masechta, so when we talk about all the dinim of halal b'chutz, of bringing korbanos outside the azara, which action is a person chayav karis for and which not for doing it outside the azara? Rav Nechemia omer shiurei adam shekriven b'chutz chayav. Rav Nechemia says there that if you take the shirayim and offer, that if a person takes the shirayim and offers them outside the azara, then he's chayav karis. In other words, Rav Nechemia apparently seems to be the only one who holds that blood that's about to be placed on the Yisoid, blood that's in the Mizrach after all the Matanis have done, is still considered full-fledged blood as far as Hakara, and therefore that if it was done outside the Azara, the person is Chayav Karis. The Chachamim apparently would disagree with him, because the Chachamim say the person is not Chayav Karis for bringing such blood outside the Azara. Because it's only really for the Yisoid at this point, so it's only Shirayim, and the Shirayim are not active.
They would agree on the Karen?
If you have blood, that's right. Well, we said before, Rav Papa had said that one of the eight dinim that apply to the second, third, and fourth, just like the first, is that if they're done outside the Azara, then a person is Chayav Karis. Fine, not necessarily would the Chachamim disagree with that. But at the very least, if you're telling me, Rav Papa, that you're trying to infer from the Mishnah later on that there's a difference between blood that's going to be placed on the Keren versus that was already placed on the Keren, and you're going to say, when it was placed on the Keren, then it doesn't require kibbutz. If it's going to be placed on the Keren, even though it's only the second, third, or fourth Matana, then it does require kibbutz. Then you would have to learn the part about the Yisoid the same way. But according to the Chachamim, any blood that's about to be placed on the Yisoid, or any blood that was already placed on the Yisoid, kibbutz doesn't apply to it. The only one who says that the blood that's ready to be placed on the Yisoid has any special status says, therefore, that there's a distinction between before it was placed on the Yisoid and afterwards, and therefore he might also say that there's a distinction between before it was placed on the Keren and afterwards. The Chachamim, just like they don't hold that there's any distinction with the Yisod, not necessarily would they hold that there's any distinction with the Keren as well. So they might hold, in other words, we might assume that they hold the first Matana fine. Obviously, the first Matana is required for Kapara. If the blood splashes on clothing before that, obviously it requires Kibbutz. But after the first Matana, once the Kapara has already been accomplished, they might say that any blood that's in the Mizrach afterwards is the equivalent of Shirayim, and therefore you don't need Kibbutz. Therefore, you don't need Kibbutz. Just like what they would say about bringing it outside the Azara, we don't know. But at any rate, we don't have any reason to think that they would necessarily agree with Reb Nechemiah about that, just like they don't agree with him about the Yisod. So that's how Rashi learns. Tosfos points out that if the Gemara meant to say that the Mishnah is according to Reb Nechemiah, and therefore that Reb Papa's proof doesn't work, then it should have used the word Ella. It should have said Ella Amani Reb Nechemiah. Rather, you would have to say, instead of just saying Homani Reb Nechemiah, it should have said Ella. Rather, you can't use this Mishnah because you have to understand that the distinction the Mishnah is making between before and after the Yisod can only work according to Reb Nechemiah, and therefore the distinction about the Keren might also only be according to him. So therefore, Tosfos learns differently that this Homani Reb Nechemiah is actually an answer. Is actually an answer, which means, in other words, that the Tosfos gives two explanations how it might be an answer. One is, given that Reb Nechemiah holds that bringing this blood, the shirayim that's ready to be placed on the yisoid outside the azara makes a person chayav kares, then fine. So at least we could say, okay, the Chachamim may not agree with that, but at least they might agree with the kibbutz part. Or rather, no, actually what it is rather sorry, like this. Reb Nechemiah would say that a person is chayav kares for bringing it outside. He would also say that he would also say that kibbutz applies to blood on the yisod. Well, by the same logic, in other words, the Chachamim would, we could say that Reb Papa could understand that the Chachamim would agree with Reb Nechemiah's basic point, which is that wherever you're required to do kibbutz for the blood, a person is also chayav kares for doing it outside, or vice versa. Wherever he's chayav kares for doing it outside, you require kibbutz. Since the Chachamim presumably would agree that a person is chayav kares for doing the remaining three matanis outside, we don't find that they would say otherwise. Therefore, they would have to agree that they're not necessary, but still, there's something that is supposed to be done between. Therefore, they would also hold, like Reb Nechemiah, that kibbutz applies to it as well. The only difference would be Reb Nechemiah extends that to blood that's ready to be placed on the yisod, and the Chachamim would just agree with that point. That's one way of learning. In other words, we can answer therefore. They would say like this, that only blood that's supposed to be placed on the kronos, then these two dinim apply to them. That doing it outside makes the person high of courage, and that if it splashes on clothing, it requires kibbutz. Reb Nechemiah would say that the same thing applies to blood that's going to be placed on the yisod. So the difference between the Chachamim and Reb Nechemiah would only be on that point. Does it apply to blood? Does it apply also to blood being placed on the yisod? But they would both agree with the concept that whatever blood a person is high of courage for doing bachos would also be the kind of blood for which you require kibbutz. So therefore, according to that, Reb Papa has a valid proof over here. Fine. The last part of the Mishnah goes only according to Reb Nechemiah because it distinguishes within the Yisoid. But still, he might say that the earlier part, we could say, goes according to the earlier part the Chachamim would agree to as well.
Why does Chachamim agree on the Keren and disagree on the Yisoid?
Because they would say the difference is that the matonis on the keren are all part of the basic mitzvah. True, you don't need them la'akr, you only need them la'mitzvah. But nevertheless, there's still something that's supposed to be done on the kronos. The spilling on the yisod is also a mitzvah, but it's like a lesser mitzvah. It's only like shiore mitzvah. It's only like the remainders of the mitzvah. So therefore, they might say that there's less of an issue doing that. Once you have that the complete kapara has been done with the four matanis, the spilling out on the yisod is kind of an extra thing. Therefore, they would say that doing it outside the azara doesn't make a person chayav kares. And they would also say, like, and according to Tosfos' logic, they would also say, therefore, that such blood doesn't require kibbutz. As opposed to Reb Nechemiah, but they would both agree with the idea that there is a connection between those two things. When you're chayav for bachos, then you're also chayav kibbutz, and when not, then not.
Right.
Okay. That's the point of Tosfos' explanation. Then Rashi would disagree, right? Then turns, because Rashi learns that the Gemara is asking a question on the Papa, how can you work this if the Mishnah goes only according to Reb Nachem? Tosfos is explaining that this is part of the answer. Another explanation Tosfos gives is that maybe you could say that within the two statements themselves about Keren versus Yisoid, you could say one of them is according to the Rabbanan and the other one is according to the Nechem. It happens, Tosfos says. It's not usual to say that a Mishnah should go like two different Tanoim, but it happens sometimes. All right. So now the Gemara asks, let's go back to according to Rashi. The Gemara has, on the face of it, pointed out that how does Rav Papa have a proof from this Mishnah when this Mishnah seemingly only goes like Rav Nachem? But now, according to that way of looking at it, now the Gemara is going to take up a side. What makes you say that even Rav Nachem would say that there's a connection between halal, bachos, and kibbutz? In other words, at least you, the Makshan, are asking on Rav Papa because you're saying the Mishnah can only work appointed of Nachem. But not necessarily. It may not even work even appointed of Nechemya.
Who says
Rav Nechemya would hold that there's that connection that between Kibbutz and Ben Bachot, right? And then Halal Bachot, right? So in other words, the point is, as Mephoshim explained, it's not the Gemara is not going to try to defend Rav Papa yet. We'll get back to defending Rav Papa later. The Gemara is sort of going into a side thing. You, the Makshan, are asking, how can you, Rav Papa, use this Mishnah when apparently it only goes according to Rav Nechemya? So first we're going to deal with that point. What makes us say it even goes according to Rav Nechemya? Not what makes us say it goes according to Rav Nechemya, but rather, who says, even if we say that Mishnah goes like Rav Nechemya, who says that he would draw that comparison between halah and kibbutz? So the Gemara says, "Emer b'shama says that Rav Nechemya l'inyan halah." You see, it is true. You can say that you find Rav Nechemya saying that if a person offers the shirayim outside the azara, he's chayav kares. And you could say the reason why he says that needed to have a ayvarim of gorim. Because after all, he would say that blood is no worse than the Evorim of Pedorim, than the limbs and the fats of the Korbanos, which also are supposed to be burnt on the Mizbeah, which are definitely not Ma'ak of Kapara. We know, we've established already many times, that the only thing that's required for Kapara with any Korban is blood reaching the Mizbeah. After that, the Evorim of Pedorim, all the fats that you have to burn the fats, and in the case of an oil of the whole Korban, that's only L'mitzvah, it's not Ma'ak, definitely. Pedorim, because pedorim specifically means the peder is specifically one particular sheet of fat, the diaphragm, I think it is. Whatever it is, it's when the kohenim the pasuk mentions it first. The pasuk mentions that you take that's a rosh ve'as a poder, the head and the poder. When we get to in a year's time, Baruch Hashem, a year and a half or whatever, when we learn the sefer Talmud, which deals with the details of the procedures of the karbonis, it says over there that. What they did is the first Kohen in line would hold the head of the animal in one hand, and then now he's holding it with the neck up. The neck up is full of blood; it doesn't look very nice. Therefore, you take this pebble, you take this sheet of fat. Yeah, you have the head is turned upside down, basically. So that's he's holding the horns like between his fingers or whatever, and he has the neck, the base of shita facing. What do you mean? The animal's dead at this point; it's dissected. So he's carrying the head to the mizbeach in order that you're not carrying it with the neck exposed there and bloody like that, but it wouldn't look derecheretzik for Hashem. Instead, they would take the sheet of fat, the header, the diaphragm, or whatever it is, and cover the base of shchita with it. So therefore, we mention the word pedarim in that sense, but it means more generally the fat. Right? Anyway, now those things are definitely not massive. If the meat became tomei or whatever, somehow or other the meat was never brought onto the mizbeach, or the fats were never brought onto the mizbeach, the korban is still perfectly kosher. And yet, we know for a fact, and everybody agrees to this, that if a person were to burn the fats or the limbs of the korban outside the azara, he would be chayav kares. So therefore, the Nechemya could say, fine, the blood that's supposed to go as shirayim, I mean, so is no worse than that. So therefore, that would be reason enough for him to say that. Like, where do you ever see, though, that Rav Nechemya specifically says that such blood requires kibbutz, requires this washing in the Azara, which is what Rav Papa... So again, even if Rav Papa were to say, fine, I'm going like Rav Nechemya, but who says that Rav Nechemya even holds this thing? True, he holds that the question isn't really so much on Rapapa. The question is on the Makshin. You assumed that this Mishnah that Rapapa quoted is only a coincidence of Nehemiah, but even Reb Nehemiah himself may not hold of that concept. But then who does Rapapa have at all? The answer is Ain. Yes, indeed, Reb Nehemiah does hold that there's a connection between them. That blood which is Shirayim, blood which is supposed to go on the Yisod, which a person offers outside the Azara, is Chayav Karis, if he does, and also that if such blood splashes on clothing, it has to be washed in the Azara. Vaha Tanya, and indeed we learn like that in a Braisa.
That is the proof. Sir.
That is the proof that we're going to say now. And Rashi says it here, Vaha Tanya b'ni Chutza. Usually, of course, in Gemara terminology, usually Vaha Tanya is a question. Vaha Tanya, but didn't we learn in a Braisa? But you have in many places in Shas where Vaha Tanya is a statement. That Vaha Tanya, and indeed thus we learn in a Braisa, Domim HaTa'unin Yisod, Ta'unin Kibbutz, blood that has yet to be poured on the Yisod, namely the Shirayim, which have to be poured after the Yisod, Ta'unin Kibbutz, such blood also, if it lands on clothing, that clothing has to be washed in the Azara, or Machshava Me'elasan, also Machshava is still able to be effective on them, so if somebody has in mind during the pouring onto the Yisod that he's going to eat the meat tomorrow or whatever, then it becomes pickle.
That's going to
go. That's what we're going to see in a second. Wait. Bahamala man, apparently it's coincidental of Nehemiah. Right, we're going to see in a second. Bahamala man bachutz chayev, also if somebody offers such blood outside the Azara, he's chayev kodesh. Again, even though this is only blood versus shirayim, it's only what's meant to be poured on the Yisod.
It would seem to be in parallel with what we...
Yeah, well, that's the point. Now, we're going to bring a proof. We're going to see in a second how we see that this braisa goes like Rav Nehemiah, and we see that this braisa also says that it requires kibbutz. So we see that Rav Nehemiah does indeed hold that it does require kibbutz. So confirming at least what our Makshin asked on Rapapa, which is, how can you use this Mishnah when it goes only according to the Nehemiah? So then we still have to deal with how we're going to defend Rapapa, but that's next. Continues the braisa. The Domim HaNishpachim La'ama, on the other hand, as we've learned before, sometimes you have blood which became puzzle for one reason or another, and that you don't pour on the Mizbeach. Instead, you pour it into the Amma, into the water channel that runs through the Azara, and it just gets washed away and goes into Nahal Kidron.
Which is an Amma Y.
It's an Amma Y, that's why they call it the Amma, right? But such blood that's poured into the Amma, ain't to unin kibbutz, that kind of blood, which is puzzle, if it splashes onto clothing, the clothing does not have to be washed in the Azara. The ain machshava me'elasan, a machshava of pigle would not be effective. It wouldn't make the korban pigle. Now, of course, if we're talking about the blood is being spilled into the amma, usually it means the korban is already possible. But the point is, in other words, it can't become pigle. So, there's that also. But the point is, right? Even I mean, we had cases, for example, before where blood. We had cases before where the korban was kosher, but some of the blood is still spilled into the amma. For example, we said when the blood was received in four cups, and then he did all the matanis from one of them, then the other three got poured into the amma. But fine, in that case, obviously it can't become pigle because all the matanis were already gone. Right, but here what we're saying is that since the blood is being poured into the amma, then therefore machshava is not effective because it's already kosher, so it can't become pigle, right? The amala man bachutz poter. And if somebody were to offer such blood, that's anyway going to be spilled into the Amma. If he were to offer it outside the Azara, he would be potter from Kares. Thus far the Braisa. So the Gemara says, Man Shamat Le Dama Malamehen Bachutz Chayev. Now, when it comes to the first category, where we said blood that's supposed to be placed onto the Yisod, which Tana do we find that says that if a person were to offer such blood, Bachutz, he would be Chayev? That is Reb Nehemiah. That is specifically a coincidence of Reb Nehemiah, because we said that Chachamim would disagree with that concept. But Chachamim would say that blood that's to be spilled on the Yisod is not subject to the rule of Amala Bachot.
So there's the proof.
V'ka'amar Cho'en Kibbutz. V'ka'amar Cho'en Kibbutz. And we see this Braisa says that such blood also requires kibbutz, also has to be washed in the Azara. So there you go. We are correct in our initial assumption that Reb Nehemiah, who says that it's considered blood to the extent that a person would be high of Karis for offering it outside the Azara, he would also say that it's considered blood of a korban to the extent that it splashes on clothing and has to be washed in the Azara. So again, that supports our original question on, we still have our original question on Rapapa, which is, how is he bringing a proof from this Mishnah, where again the Mishnah had mentioned blood that splashed from the Keren, which we wanted to deduce from that as a difference whether it was already on the Keren or not. But on the other hand, the Mishnah also says Mina Yisod, and apparently according to the Chachamim, there's no difference whether it was on the Yisod yet or not. So we're still left with that question on Rapapa.
Why is he bringing this Mishnah? Or this Braisa, rather?
Well, so he brought the Mishnah because he wanted to use it as a proof. But we said, if you're going to understand the distinction between on the Keren and before the Keren that way, then you would also have to understand that that the same distinction would hold true for before the Yisod and after the Yisod. Only Rav Nechemia holds that way. So therefore, how can you use it? How can you say it? How can you be saying your din, assuming that the Chachamim would agree with that? So first we have to deal with the side issue, how we know even Rav Nechemia holds that it requires two. We've dealt with that, but now we're still back to the question on hand. So before we get back to defending Rav Papa, we're first going to deal with another issue in this Braisa from which eventually there will emerge an answer to support Rav Papa. By the way, Tosfos deals, as you can see here, the long Tosfos that takes up most of the Amud, that deals with the question, this that Rav Nechemia is saying, that if a person offers the Shiorei Hadam outside the Azorei, his Chayav Kares, our Gemara seems to be assuming that that would be true, whether the Korban was the type, whether it was a Chatas Chitzoina, the type where the blood is placed only on the outer Mizbeach, or whether it's a Chatas Apnimis, only the type where the blood is supposed to be placed on the inner Mizbeach. And Tosfos gets into a long discussion on the basis of comparing it with a Gemara towards the end of the Masechta, when we talk about the whole concept of Amal Abachot, where it seems from there that Rav Nechemia holds his concept only when it comes to Chatzaris Apnimis, whereas our Gemara seems to be saying that it applies equally well to Chatzaris Chatzaris.
Where does it say that one starts?
Because that's the implication over here. What's the whole point? Your Papa is talking about. You have a chatas chitzoina where the first matana was done, and there's yet to be done the second, third, and fourth. And afterwards, the blood is going to be placed on the side. And we're talking about when it would require kibbutz and when would it not, and when is a person chayav kares for offering it bachos and when not, and all of that. We're talking about chatas chitzoina, and we're bringing in Rav Nechemia's opinion. But if Rav Nechemia himself only holds that a person is chayav for bringing the shinayim only when it comes to chatzaris apnimius, then that doesn't work with our Gemara. So Tosfos goes back, which assumes that it would, which our Gemara is talking about, that it applies to chatzaris apnimius. Yeah. So Tosfos goes back and forth quite a bit with the possibilities. Is it maybe indeed that Rav Nechemia does hold it by both, or is it maybe our Gemara disagrees with the one later on? So sometimes you have that. Sometimes you have different sugyas which take different views on a different position on something without saying so explicitly. So our Gemara may be assuming Rav Nechemia holds across the board, and that one may be assuming that he only holds it by Pnimius. The other possibility is that maybe the Tosfos discusses maybe we can learn that Gemara differently, and the Tosfos goes back and forth quite a bit among the different Balei Tosfos discussing the pros and cons of all of that. All right. Anyway, getting back to our Gemara. The question is, are you telling me that when it comes to damim that have to be placed on the yisod, again, where all the machshavas have been done and all that's left is to spill them onto the yisod, are you telling me machshava is still able to be effective on that? That if you had a machshava, the korban could still become pigul at that point?
According to...
The Braita said so, but the question is, how can we say that? V'hatanya, but we learn in another Braita. Yotsu shirayim v'aktoras emurin she'en ma'akvin es hakapara, as opposed to, the Braita says, we exclude from the rule of pigul, we exclude shirayim, the spilling of the leftovers onto the yisod, and haktoras emurin, and the burning of the emurim on the mizbeach, she'en ma'akvin es hakapara, which those things do not prevent the kapara from taking place, because again, once the original matana, the blood has been done, then the kapara is accomplished. Everything else after that is only the mitzvah. And the Braita says, she'en machshava ma'elos behen. Machshava is not effective on them. And if a person were to have machshava, a thought of chutzlas mana or chutzlas mekoymo, too late, the korban is not possible or pigle. So how can this previous Braita tell me machshava ma'elos behen? The answer is, kitanya hahi, v'sholosh matonis shebachata. This Braita that says the machshava ma'elos behen is not talking actually about the blood where all that's left to be done is to place it on the yisod. Rather, that Braita is talking about the remaining three matonis. So again, in other words, the Braita would be saying like this, that... When would we say the first Braita that we quoted at the top of the Amud that says Zomim Atoni Yisoid, we said Machshava Ma'elos Behen, would be referring to the remaining three Matanis, the second, third, and fourth. those machshava could still be effective. If he has a machshava still, then it could still pass all the korban. As opposed to once all four matanis have done, and all that's left is to be spilled on the yisoid, that would be the next price that we floated that said that machshava is not mayor.
Even in the last 3 years, you said it's a mitzvah.
That is going to, we're going to point out soon that that still contradicts another statement of Rapapa before, because Rapapa said that was one of the four things where the three Masonis are likely Shirayim in that sense, that Machshava is not Moral in them. So we still have to deal with that also, but that's another point, yeah. Okay. So the question is, first of all, on the language, then what do you mean? The first Braita called it Domim Ma'tu'unin Yisoid, blood that has to be placed onto the Yisoid. What do you mean? It's supposed to be placed on the Yisoid. Lekeren Hazli. This blood is still, some of it anyway, is supposed to be placed on the remaining three Kronos. Because you still have only one Keren's been done so far. You have three more to go. And therefore, the wiser Braita calling it Domim Ma'tu'unin Yisoid, as if like all that's left to do is to place it on the Yisoid. When you have, when you're still really, really going on to the chronics.
And explains the Mashallah Moritz then.
Right. Okay, you're right. So the Gemara says, Eman nit onin yisod. You're right. When we say domim atu'unin yisod, we don't mean that they're directly going to go on to the yisod. We mean that eventually there's going to be a mitzvah in them that the shirayim is going to go on the yisod. They're not at that point yet. Hatu'unin yisod would imply that right now the only thing left to do with them is put them on the yisod. Nit onim yisoid implies that they are something where there's still something yet to be done, but eventually the rest of the blood will go onto the yisoid.
The tunin is directly.
Tunin means directly, and nit onim means that's indirectly, right. Okay, but then we have to deal with the question, fine, if you're going to assume that the first braisa is talking about the three remaining matanis, then what do you mean? What do you mean? Machshava ma'elos ben. So what do you mean? Machshava would be effective in them. Ha'amet lo shaya v'lo mefagla v'lo ayla v'gavoy. Didn't you, the Papa, say before that among that three of the four dinim that apply to the second, third, and fourth matanis are that it can't, that it doesn't, it's not master the meat, because the meat's already mortar. It's not, can't create table after the first one. Can't create table, because after the first one, it's too late to create table. And if it goes into the heichel, it doesn't pass all the carbon. So how can you say that Achshava my Ella's on those three? No, so you're right. We can't use that answer. Ella, ki, tanyahi, v'dom ha'pnim. No, rather, you have to answer that the Braisa that said, the first Braisa that said, Dama Matsu'unin Yisoid, that we said, Machshava Ma'elos Behen, is talking about B'Dama Matnim. We're talking about blood that is supposed to be placed on the inner Mizbeach. And therefore, actually, we're not talking about where it's supposed to be placed on the inner Mizbeach. We do go back to our original assumption that Dama Matsu'unin Yisoid, we don't have to change the wording now to Nit'onin Yisoid. We can say it means To'unin Yisoid. They do require, we're talking about all the Matonic inside have already been done, all the 43 or whatever it is Matonic have already been done. All that's left is to spill it onto the yisoid. However, we learned
to tune in
the yisoid, they would directly have to go onto the yisoid. But we learned before, we're going to learn later on, that you have an opinion that says, that we're going to learn in the next parak in particular, that you have an opinion that says that when it comes to Hatoris Apinius, when it comes to the kind where the blood has to be placed inside the Hechel, that with them the Shirayim is massive. Now like this, we say every day in Davening, Matan Acham, we say every day, Matan Acham, and Achavis, Shira Adama Yishevach, I said, Ma'arovi, Imloy Nasa Ma'ikev, but that's not unanimous, even though it's presented in the Mishnah as if it was unanimous. It's not, as we'll see in the Gemara when we get to the next verse. So therefore, so the first braisa over here can be according to that opinion. Dama Matu'unin Yisoid, blood which was brought into the Heichel and sprinkled over there, and now all the sprinkling has been done and all that's left now is to do the Yisoid. However, since according to that opinion, pouring it on the Yisoid is ma'akiv. If you don't, then the korban is possible. Therefore, that blood is Tu'unin Kibbos and Machshava Ma'elos Behen and Amala B'chutzchai. So not necessarily, though, are we talking about blood from Achatas Chesona. But not necessarily also are we talking about blood from the remaining three Matanis of Achatas Chesona. So therefore, we can still uphold what Rapapa said before, that you can't create pigul with the remaining three Matanis of Achatas Chesona. You could with the Shirayim of Achatas Apnim. That would be what the first Braisa is referring to.
So the point is, we
brought in that braisa before to show that Reb Nechemya holds that there's a connection between kibbutz and being malabachot. Now we're saying, though, that maybe that braisa is only referring to the shiraim of chatas hapnimi. It's not necessarily referring to chatas hapnimi. Again, that fits with Tosfos' whole point, so Tosfos' whole back and forth over here, about whether Rav Nechemiah holds his concept about malaman bachutz, whether he holds it in connection with chatas, with the shiraim of chatas hapnimi, or only the shiraim of chatas hapnimi. That goes into that whole discussion as well.
And it seems to be there's no evidence that he holds.
So we may say that the braisa is talking about pnimius, and therefore there's no proof. What he would hold about chatzonis? Right.
Not true. Yeah,
right. Okay. The question then is, avo b'domim chatzonim my poser. Fine. But what are you telling me then? That you're going to say that with the shirayim of blood that's supposed to be placed on the outer mizbeach, you would say that if he offers it b'chutz, then he's poser, and he doesn't need to do kibbutz, etc. In that case, abatoni domim anishvachim la'ama. In that case, why is the braisa? What is the first braisa at the top of the omer? What is it doing? It's telling us on the one hand you have blood that's supposed to be placed on the yisurim. On the other hand, you have blood which is poser and it's spilled into the ama. If you're going to tell me that even within blood that's placed on the yisurim itself there's a distinction between chatas apnimius and chatas chatzonius, then tell us that distinction. Don't bother mentioning the whole thing about blood going into the ama, where it's fairly obvious that since it's possible blood, then these dinim don't apply to it. Lisloy v'lisnibidida. Let the braisa make a distinction within blood that's going to the yisoid itself. Let it say that this applies, these three dinim about kibbutz and machshava and amalavachut only apply to jama masnim, only blood that was brought into the heichel and sprinkled over there, and now you're taking the shirayim out to the outer mizbeach and pouring it on the yisoid. Avo b'jama machasun and potter. But you would say that with Dhamma Chasonim, you would say you're positive.
But then if you say that, then you have another problem with what you said previously.
No, well, we still haven't brought a proof to the Papa yet. But the question is, if we're assuming, in order to make everything work so far, if we're assuming that, if we're assuming, in order to make the Papa's din about the remaining three matanos not being subject to pigle, if we're trying to make his din work by saying the only way we're subject to pigle is by the shirayim chataris apnimius, then the braisa could be making a distinction between that and chatonis. It doesn't need to be mentioned in the case about where the spilled into the hammer. The answer is homani rab nechemi. We can answer, after all, as we answered before, that the braisa goes specifically according to Rav Nechemiah, the Omar, where he says, Shire Adam Shekriven Bachutz Chayev, where he says that in fact, Shirayim of blood that were offered outside the Azara, a person is Chayev Kharis, regardless whether it was from a Chatas Apnimius or a Chatas Chatonis. So he can't make such a distinction because he would in fact hold the same that's why the Braita doesn't make that distinction because Rav Nechemiah wouldn't hold of it.
He holds by both.
Right. And the reason why Rav Nechemiah phrased the Braita the way he does, we could still say, Jama Matu'unin Yisod in the Braita refers to Pnim, like we said before. However, then in that case, we would have to ask, why is the braisa telling us pnimius versus la'ama and not mentioning chatzonius at all? The reason is because if he talked about chatzonius, he would not be able to mention all three dinim. He wouldn't be able to point out the contrast where these three dinim apply to one, but none of them apply to the other one, because...
Which three dinim?
Well, so like this, the three dinim that we said in the Mishnah, in the Braisa, rather, that you have to do kibbutz, that you have to wash the clothing in the Azara, machshava is effective on them,
right.
And hamalamehen bachot is chayiv. So fine. Rav Nechemiah could say when it comes to kibbutz and to machshava, sure, he could point out that you have, on the one hand, those dinim only apply to pnimius, but they don't necessarily apply to chatzonius. But he couldn't necessarily say that about halachos kibbutz. So in order to be able to point out this contrast, if he wants to point out three dinim that apply to one type of blood, where none of those three dinim apply to the other type, the only way he can do it is by mentioning pnimium versus domim anishvachim la'am. He can't mention chatzonius because those are sort of a hybrid. Not all these three dinim apply to it, according to him. So therefore, you could say that that's why the Braise. So we could still answer so far that Dami Matsha'un in Yisoid does not mean blood of a Chatas Kefonis. It does mean blood of a Chatas Kefonis, where you have all that you have left of the Shirayim that are supposed to be placed on the Yisoid. Reb Nechemya would say all these three Dinim still apply to them, to the Shirayim of Chatas Kefonis. Not all three of them apply to the Shirayim of Chatas Kefonis, therefore he doesn't mention it. On the other hand, none of them apply to blood that's poured into the Amma, and therefore he mentions it for contract.
So that would explain that the Braise talks about the Pneumius and the
skips the Chitonius and then talks about the Amma. Right. We could understand the Braise that way. But once we have that, therefore, that gets us back to we can assume that Rav Papa is, that we can support what Rav Papa is saying after all, because the inference that he was making from the Mishnah over there about on the Keren versus before the Keren, and we asked, wouldn't you have the same inference on the Yisoid versus before the Yisoid? He would say that not all these three dinim, Amala Bachot is chayav equally well for the ones Bishnim and the ones Bachot, the ones that were brought into the Hazel and the ones not, but Kibbutz, he might make that distinction. He would say that Kibbutz only applies to Pnimius, not to Pnimius. Therefore, we're still left with that a Papa can use his influence from the Mishnah at the quarter at the beginning of the Sugya to say that there is a difference between blood that was already placed on the Karen versus that's ready to be placed on the Karen.
Would he agree with Rebbe Nissen?
Not necessarily. No, he doesn't. No, he would be saying according to the Chachamim. He would be saying according to the Chachamim that he would be saying Reb Nechemya is the one who's saying that when it comes, Reb Nechemya is saying, and even Reb Nechemya is only saying when it comes to Chatoris Bechemius, that there's a distinction that you do kibbutz even with shirayim that are ready to go to the yisoid, but not after it really landed on the yisoid. But he might agree that Rav Nechemya, you don't have that connection necessarily. You don't say just because you chayev for offering it bachot, therefore it also needs kibbutz. And therefore, so the inference from the Mishnah that he mentioned to begin with is still supportable. We can say that we can say that both the Chachamim and Reb Nechemya would agree that blood that's on the Yisoid doesn't require kibbutz. Blood that's ready to be brought to the Yisoid, maybe according to Reb Nechemya, does if it was from Chacharit of Pnimius. But blood on the Keren versus before the Keren, that's a valid distinction that Reb Papa can use.
And that would be agreeable to...
So that would work. That would work according to the Chachamim. Right. On the other hand, Ravina says, I have a whole different way of explaining it. You're asking before that the wording of the Mishnah doesn't seem to be consistent according to the Papa, because you're saying, on the one hand, the Papa is trying to distinguish between blood on the Keren versus blood that's to be placed on the Keren. But on the other hand, that would seem to require you also need a distinction between on the Yisoid versus ready to be placed on the Yisoid. And we had to go through this whole thing over here, working with Reb Nechemya's opinion. Ravina says, I have a more straightforward explanation. I mean, a Keren means mamish. Yes, when the Mishnah says blood that spritzes from the Keren, it means literally from the Keren. In other words, as opposed to if it's ready to be placed on the Keren. If it's ready to be placed on the Keren, in other words, the second, third, or fourth Matana, it would require kibbutz.
Did we skip a line or
not? Yeah, I said that. Hamani Reb Nechemya, that the Braise would say, the Braise that was quoted before would be according to Reb Nechemya, that he said that Shirayim that were offered outside the Azara, a person is Chayev, both of Pnimi and Chesoni. But he couldn't mention Chesonis because he wouldn't have that contrast in all three ways with Chatoris HaPnim. Because he would say some of the dinim do apply and some of them don't apply in Chatoris HaPnim. Right. So he would say that He would say that when it comes to kibbutz and machshava, sure, there's a difference. But when it comes to halachos, both of them, of course, in a chayav. So in order to be able to show that contrast, that three-way contrast, he could only use pnimim versus la'ama and skip chasayim. Right, so we said that. Okay, so Ravina says I have a different way of answering the Mishnah that Rapapa brought before, where on the one hand it mentioned mina keren or mina yisod, and we asked, and Rapapa wanted to say mina keren as opposed to that's ready to be placed on the keren, but we asked, does mina yisod also mean that's ready to be placed on the yisod, and that got us all into this whole discussion. Ravina says, no, very simply. Mina keren means mamish. When it says mina keren, means literally that it splashed off the keren, as opposed to if it was ready to be put on the keren. As opposed to mina yisod, mina roed yisod. But when it says mina yisod, it can even mean when it's already suitable to go on to the yisod, once the matonis have been finished.
That's correct.
Well, the question is, that's what the Gemara is going to ask. Amalei Rav Tachlifa Magazel Ravina, Eima Aidi Va'aidi Roivu. Maybe why? You could say that both of them are parallel, that both of them are talking about where it's Rori, where it's ready to be placed. And in that case, you would say that we can't accept Rapapa's din, because we would say even when it's ready to be placed on the keren for the second and third and fourth matonis, if it splashes, it doesn't require kibbutz. The answer is, the Gemara says, Hai Mai, how are you thinking to ask such a question? Hashka Roy Lakaran Amrit Loy. If you were to say that the Mishnah is implying to us that blood that's ready to be placed on the Keren, that kibbutz doesn't apply to it, in other words, in that sense we don't consider it like blood of the Korban anymore, then Royally Yisod Nivoya, would you need to tell us that? Would the Mishnah even need to imply for us that if it's Royally Yisod, which is an even later stage where even more of the kapara has been accomplished, that would the Mishnah have to tell us the chiddush that you don't need?
If it's not royally.
Again, think of the stages over here. You have the blood is in the mizrach. The first matana is done. Until the first matana is done, the kapara hasn't been accomplished. We know that. Once the first matana is done, then you enter a stage where there's still three more matanas to be done. It's not yet ready for the yisod. However, the kapara has already been accomplished. Then you get to, you've done all four, then you reach another stage where all that's left to do is spill it on the yisod. So Ravina argues like this. If the Mishnah were to be implying that the Keren and the Yisod are completely parallel, when the blood is going to be placed on the Keren already, then kibbutz does apply to it. When it's already placed on the Keren, then not.
When it's placed on the Keren, then
you don't need kibbutz anymore, but afterwards splashes off the Keren.
And when it's placed on the
Yisod. Again, the Mishnah just told us if it came from the Keren or it came from the Yisod, meaning it was already applied to the Keren, it was already applied to the Yisod, and then it splashed off of one of those two places, then it doesn't require kibbutz.
Right.
So Ravina is arguing like this. Mina Keren means only if it came off the Keren, not if it came from the Mizrach where it was going to be placed on the Keren. As opposed to Mina Yisod means even if it came from the Mizrach before it went on to the Yisod. So it would include even all the Shiraim after all four Matanas have done. So Rav Tachlifa by Gaza is asking why should that be. So Ravina tells him like this. Because so what are the possibilities? The possibilities are either the Mishnah means to imply that Rav Tachlifa Bar Gaza are arguing that the Mishnah has to be implying that as long as the blood is in the Mizrach, then the din of kibbutz applies to it, only if it actually came from the Keren, where it was already placed on the Keren, or from the Yisod, it was already placed on the Yisod, then not. Or you're arguing that you should have to deduce that it means even if it's in the Mizrach ready to go on the Keren, even if it's Mizrach ready to go on the Yisod, then it shouldn't apply. But Ravina says you can't say that way. Because what would the Mishnah have to bother telling us about the Yisod then? If you're going to tell me that even blood in the Mizrach that's yet to be placed on the Keren for the second, third, and fourth, already it just doesn't require kibbutz, then of course, when you're even at a later stage, when all that's left to do is the Shidayim, of course it sure continues. So therefore, the Mishnah wouldn't have to be implying.
It would just say
Rory LeKeren. It would just say Keren, and you would understand from that Rory LeKeren is different.
Right,
you would say that Roy LeKeren rather is right, that Roy LeKeren when it's in the Mizrach is the same thing as Keren, then automatically you would know the same thing as true as far as these things. Right. Ella mina Keren, mina Keren mamish. Therefore, obviously it must be. Mina Keren must be only from the Keren itself, but from the Mizrach on the way to the Keren is still toned kibbutz, still required kibbutz. Then, mina yisod, mina royal yisod, then when it continues, mina yisod, it means literally from the yisod. So in other words, of the four stages that you can have after the first matana, you would have, the Mishnah would be implying as follows, says Ravina. The first stage, when the blood is in the mizrak, ready for the second, third, and fourth one, then tone kibbutz. Second stage is once the blood already reached the keren, and then it splashed onto clothing, ain't it tone kibbutz. Third stage, royally yisod, in the mizrak, ready to be placed on the yisod, also ain't tone kibbutz. It also doesn't require kibbutz. And the fourth one, when it's on the yisod, then for sure it doesn't require kibbutz. So that's how Ravina gets, logically, that mina yisod doesn't just mean from the yisod, it means when it's already ready to go on to the yisod. Because otherwise the Mishnah wouldn't have to tell us.
You could have said just, without mentioning the yisod, after the Karen.
Fine, but it has to tell us. It mentions the yisod in order to clarify that when we talk about the Karen, we don't mean it's on its way to the Karen in the Mizrach. Stage one, we mean only when it's similar to, only when it's off the Karen itself. Similar to being off the yisod itself.
That's why you learn about the yisod.
That's why it mentions the yisod, in order to clarify that. But it really means, in other words, that three out of the four stages, all the one after it goes on to the keren, then you're closer from kibbutz. And that was Rapapa's point before that the blood that's in the mizrach, ready for the second, third, and fourth matanis, is tohu kibbutz, and it splashes onto clothing, but anything after that is not.
Mishnah could have said it much more directly.
Okay, but the Mishnah said it this way, and this way we can derive what we mean by keren. We can derive it from yisod. What we don't do, it can't be that it means that if it's on the way to the keren, it doesn't need kibbutz, because then it wouldn't have to mention yisod at all.
Exactly.
Right. The fact that it mentions yisod implies that we're meant to learn from that to keren. Okay.
It seems a bit weird that we have to learn caring from yourself.
Okay, but that's, the Mishnah a lot of times will do that kind of thing. The Mishnah doesn't always spell out things in so many words. The Mishnah gives us a certain wording, and the Gemara deduces a halach. But if it was meant to be that before it went to the Karen already, then the din of kibbutz doesn't apply, then mentioning the yisod would be completely superfluous. So that's what Ravina is saying. That's why it happens.
Why would you learn from the yisod, which is secondary, and apply for the keren, which is really primary and essential?
Granted, but well, we know the first keren obviously is essential. Yeah. But what we're saying is, in other words, that given that the Mishnah did mention yisod, then we understand the only reason for it to mention yisod is in order to clarify for us that it means even when it's ready to go to the yisod, as opposed to when it's ready to go to the keren. To teach about the contrast, rather, between the yisod and the keren. When it's on its way to the keren, yes. When it's on its way to the yisod, no.
That's
Ravina's answer. So that's another way. So we have two ways of supporting what Rapapa had said. One by analyzing the Mishnayos and Braisos over there and figuring out Rav Nechemia's opinion versus the Chachamim, and the other just by looking carefully at the wording in the Mishnah itself. Yes. Okay. Next. We said in
the
the blood from the Rapapa's 12 dinim still applies. There are the 8 things in which the 3 matanis are like the original one, and there are 4 in which it's not. Yeah. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, although the Mishnah said, on the other hand, any blood that has to be placed on the inner mizbeach, if you miss even one matana, then the whole thing is no good, as opposed to the chatas, chitzona, and the other korbanos that are good, where we said only the first one is essential. So, where do we learn this from? Tanan Avonim, we learn it in Braisa. The Pasuk says, in Parashat Vayikra, it talks about the power Kohen Gadol, which we learned about in Horius, where the Kohen Gadol makes a mistake in Halacha and follows it. Then it talks about the power Helam Davish al Sibur, which we also learned about over there, where the Sanhedrin makes a mistake in Halacha and most of the people follow it. So the Pasuk goes and the Pasuk goes, first it talks about all the details of the power Kohen Gadol and goes through blow by blow what you have to do with it. Then it starts talking about the power Helam Davish al Sibur. And it goes also through, it starts going through. It mentions about how also you have to bring the blood into the heichol and sprinkle it in front of the parochas and on the mizbeach azav. Then it says like this, va'osa kasher osa. The whole passage goes, va'osa lapor kasher osa laparachatas. You should do to this bull what he did for the parachatas, meaning of the Kohen Gadol. In other words, the procedure is exactly the same thing. So the question is, ma bol lumoid? What exactly is that pasuk coming to teach us? No, what exactly is the pasuk already mentioned. Now like this, you have again, by the power of Kohen Gadol, the pasuk mentions that you have to take the blood into the Heichal and you have to sprinkle it 7 times in front of the Kaporetus and then on the Mizbeach Hazav, and then you pour the rest of the Shiraim on the Yisod of the Mizbeach HaChesed. Then it starts talking about the power of Helam Delo Shel Tzibur, and it mentions exactly the same procedures.
Why
does it need to add the words that he should do it like the other one? What is that coming to teach us? It already spells out what he has to do. What is it coming to teach us? And Rashi points out it can't be coming to teach us that the pasuk then continues that you have to that the pasuk then continues about the emurim, and fine, by the power helam davar shel tzibur, it doesn't list all the emurim, so you could argue maybe those are what you have to learn from the power of Kohen Gadol. The problem with that is that, again, we said before that kapara is only, for kapara all you need is the blood. The emurim are not essential to kapara, and the pasuk is saying the chibur olah. So therefore, it has to be talking about something else that we're learning from the other one, something involving the dam. But what
not
is it? It's something involving the kapara, namely the dam, not the emurim. But the dam, it says by each one of them individually that you need to do 7 in front of the kapara, in front of the parochas, and then on the mizbeach hazav, etc. So what are we learning from it? What we learn from it is the Torah is repeating the fact that you have to do all the hazoyas, all the sprinklings inside the heichal. And as we have the general rule that when the Torah repeats something in connection with korbanos, it means it's la'akiv, it means it's essential. So that's what it is. So there you go. That if he missed out one single one of the matanos, then he doesn't count for anything, because that's why the pasuk repeats. Says this word, va'ota, kasha ota, to teach us exactly what you have to do with one, you have to do with the other one, and if you leave anything out, then it's ma'akim.
In other words, what you learned about the first one, you learned about all the
Well, in other words, what it means is, va'ota, kasha ota, do as you were told to do, meaning, in other words, it's repeating twice that you have what you have to do. Therefore, that means ma'akim. Okay, the question is, Emi Ela Matan Sheva, Shema Akhbet V'Homokim. Fine. You could say, though, you could still argue that maybe that limud only applies to the 7, actually 8 sprinklings in front of the Parochas. Because what do you have? He does in front of the Parochas, Akhbet V'Mayel V'Sheva L'Mata, like Ashim Kippur. Then 7 sprinklings you find in other places, which we'll talk at the top of Amud Beis, where we see those other places. What we see in other places, where the Torah also tells us to do 7 sprinklings, and we know the pasuk says if you miss one of them, then it's no good. Matam dalad minayin. How do we know the same thing applies to the application, to the 4 applications of blood on the mizbeach hazav, where we don't find necessarily anywhere else that they're active? Tamad lema, ken yasa lapur, zep par yemek apurim. Therefore, the pasuk says, again, the whole pasuk goes, v'osa lapur, kasha, osa lapara hatas, ken yasa loy. So we take the word lapur, meaning zep par yemek apurim. This refers to a third par that's not mentioned in this parasha, but mentioned in a different parasha, the one of Yom Kippur. Where there it says that you need to do four applications on the Mizbeach Hazav. And Kasha also, we'll see later on in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to explain what exactly we need to learn regarding the power. There's no power helam of Yom Kippur. There's a power Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur. What we're saying is, though, that, okay, again, the pasuk is comparing the power helam dover and the power and the power Kohen Gadol of the power Kohen Gadol of year round, where he made a mistake in halacha, and the power helam dover shall sit year round. It's comparing them by using the words va'otha kasha otha to teach us that repetition teaches us that whatever it says by one is essential, the same thing by the other. But we could argue maybe that limud only applies to the initial 7 matanos. Maybe it doesn't apply to the 4 on the mizbeach hazav. But therefore we're saying the pasuk also mentions lapor, and we learn from that par is not one of these 2 parim. It's a third par, namely the par of Yom Kippur, that it is similar to the par helam davar. And we'll see later on, the Gemara is going to discuss exactly what the similarity is. But we know that the par of Yom Kippur, you have 4 matanos on the corners of the mizbeach hazav. So therefore here also, when it says kasha also lapur, then when it continues, as he did to the par, again, we're darshaning from the word lapur, that par koyin mashiach, that refers to the par koyin mashiach, which was said in the earlier parasha. So therefore, again, we have the hekesh to say that just whatever is ma'akiv by one is ma'akiv by another. And later on, the Gemara is going to explain, we'll get to it tomorrow, Bez Hashem, how we know that by Yom Kippur itself, how we know it's massive. But once we know that, then we'll know for all the other ones as well through the Tekish.
So what would apply?
What applies to the power of Yom Kippur applies to all the other ones.
And that we draw that?
That we're going to draw, but we're drawing that from the Tekish over here, the fact that the Torah is making a Hekish. But also Lapur, Kasha, also the Parachatos, Kenya, also Loi. So by darshaning phrase by phrase, this process, and when it says hachatos elus tiir avodas kachavim, when it adds in the pasuk the word hachatos, this means also the tiir avodas kachavim, the ones with it that the tzibur brings, also as we learned about in Hodias, where the tzibur brings, if specifically if the Sanhedrin made a mistake in paskening that a certain type of avodah zarah is mutter, then he said besides for the pyre they also bring a sawyer. They bring a goat as a korban, actually one for each shape that we set over there, and they also bring the blood inside the azara.
How can you apply from a part to a side?
Because that's a chata, not from the word hapara, but from the word hachata.
Yeah.
The word hachata is extra. So therefore we can learn that it also applies to the theory of it's him, that them also, they also, the blood of them is brought into the hekel, them also, they have to be sprinkled achas l'mayla v'shev l'mata, and then four on the, and then four on the mizbech azad, and everything is massive. So, continues the Braita, Yochol Shani Marba, Asira Rezolam, Asira Rosh HaChodashim. You would think in that case, if already you're including the word Hachatos, you're already including the Sura of Avodah Zarah, you would think maybe you should also include all the goats that are brought as Chatois on Yom Tovim and on Rosh Chodesh. Maybe those should also be considered Chatois of Minyat. Maybe those should also be burnt instead of being eaten. Which Tosis, by the way, brings up the point. In that case, if they were meant to be burnt rather than eaten, then why is Moshe, if that's the Havam, you know, then why would Moshe have been so upset that Aaron and his sons were burning the Chatos of Rosh Chodesh?
Because it was supposed to be burnt.
If our Gemara is asking, how do we know that they're not meant to be burnt? Shouldn't the Braita say, of course we know they can't be burnt, because then what was Moshe so upset about? The answer is Tosfos says that's exactly it. The other way around, you could say that the Braita could be asking, why indeed did Moshe not derive from this pasuk over here to say it should be burnt, and therefore there's nothing to get upset about?
That we don't have an answer.
Well, we're going to have an answer in a second. We're going to show that the Tzirir Golem and Tzirir Shchodesh are not burnt. But for purposes of the question, we could think that way because we could say it wouldn't be a stira from what Moshe did, because maybe Moshe himself should have realized that. The Mitzvah Eisan in the back of the Gemara brings a different interesting idea. He says there's actually a machlokas tanoim. We usually learn, and Rashi mentions it on the pasuk, that the miluim of the Mishkan began on Chof Gimel Adar, and the eighth day by Ibrahim Hashmini was Rosh Chodesh Nissan. What he brings is actually an opinion of some tanoim that no, the inauguration of the Mishkan began on Rosh Chodesh Nissan and ended on Ches Nissan. In that case, the Sawyer that Moshe is upset about, that they burnt, is not a Sawyer of Rosh Chodesh at all, because the week after Rosh Chodesh, obviously it was one of the other Sirim. So therefore, you wouldn't have a Sirim. You could say the Sawyer of Rosh Chodesh is supposed to be burnt, but there wasn't a Sawyer of Rosh Chodesh of that day. Whatever it is. Anyway. Right. Okay, so getting back to our Gemara then, so how do we know, if we already have the word Hachatos to include the Sawyer, the Sawyer of Avodah Zarah, how do we know maybe also every Chatos Sigur, all the ones that are brought on Yom Tovim, all the ones that are brought on Rosh Chodesh, should also be burnt? No, Talmud Loim Loi. Therefore, the pasuk finishes off, Kenya Asa Loi. Thus he should do for him. Meaning, which is a mute, only for that one, not for any other curve.
Meaning, only for
Yom Kippur. Only for the ones who are Yom Kippur and the one of Avodah Zarah. Only the one of Yom Kippur and of Avodah Zarah, right? So the question is, well then what's the logic? What makes you say that you should include the one of Avodah Zarah and exclude the ones of the Yom Tovim and Rosh Chodesh?
Yeah, we're including Yom
Kippur. We were saying the one of Yom Kippur and specifically the one of Avodah Zarah, we're saying is like the other ones that gets brought into the Heichal as opposed to the ones of Rosh Chodesh and Yom Tov. But who says maybe the other way around? Maybe the one of Rosh Chodesh and Yom Tov is brought into the Heichal and later on is burnt, and the one of Avodah Zarah is not. Maybe the one of Avodah Zarah is like a regular Chatos Katanis. The answer is achashiriba, possible miut. Fine. Given that we have a ribu and a miut in the pasuk, then we have to figure logically out this. Marbanias elu shemachakrin alaveras mitzvah yidua. We can be marba. It's logical that the pasuk is coming to include the surah of Avodah Zarah shemachakrin alaveras mitzvah yidua, which after all is being machakr for violating a specific known mitzvah. Zarah. They knew what they did wrong. They knew that they worshipped the Avodah Zarah mistakenly based on the staff of the Sanhedrin. Umoyti ani elu she'im mechapen al veres mitzvah yidua. As opposed to the ones of Regolim and the ones of Rishchodesh. Not there was no chet. We learned at the beginning of Shavuos. Those are mechapen for the case where a person was over on Tumas Mikdash V'Kodshav but didn't know about it. We learned at the beginning of Shavuos. We had a whole sugya over there, a whole Mishnah and a whole Gemara on it. That they're mechaper on the case where a person didn't know to begin with that he was tahor and later on found out that he was. So therefore, it's logical that we're comparing them to the parakol Mashiach and the par and the parakol and davashol sin. Both of those are brought for a known avera. The kohen Mashiach passed mistakenly on something and then followed his own stack. And later on finds out that his stack was wrong and he had done an avera. The parakol and davashol sin were same thing. If we're going to include another korban that's in that same category, it's logical to include the one of Avodah Zarah, which is also for a specific known Avera, which eventually they find out that they did wrong. Not for Tumas Mikdash V'Kodshav, where the person doesn't know to begin with. He never knew that he was Tameh. He never found out that he had entered the Beit Mikdash when he was Tameh. So therefore, it's more logical to exclude those. Continues the Brisa, the rest of the pasuk goes, so the word v'chifer is a ribui, it means that the kapara has been accomplished no matter what, so therefore achvishle samach, I mean even though smicha was not done, like this when you have the parhelam davashal sibur, is supposed to be that three of the members of the Sanhedrin lean their hands on it. Usually you have kapara comes even without that, right? Now Tosafot points out. Usually we know that smicha is not massive. The difference is actually Rashi points out as well here where you have where the pasuk finishes off that you have to do kasher also. You would think maybe it has to be done exactly as said, including the smicha. So therefore we need the word v'chiper to tell us that not. You would think that maybe the smicha is massive in this one case. No, so we have the word b'chidra to tell us on that. The pasuk continues, v'nislach achvishle nothen shirayim. And the pasuk finishes off, v'nislach lahem, and it'll be forgiven for them. That means even if they didn't pour the shirayim on the base of the mizbech. So again, the question is, what's the logic that you're saying earlier in the braisa that if you missed even one of the hazois, then the korban is possible, but if you missed out smicho shirayim, the korban is possible. What's the logic?
What's the logic for meaning what?
Why shouldn't you say the other way around? You should say that maybe you missed one of the matzonis. The pasuk is telling us the nislach, is the chiper and the nislach. You're yotze no matter what. And kasha also would tell us that it has to be exactly the same as far as smicho, as far as shirayim.
Why don't you say?
The braisa is telling us that if you miss even one of the matzonis, the korban is possible. On the other hand, if you didn't do smicha or you didn't do shirayim, then the korban is kosher. Mm-hmm. Why? The pasuk doesn't spell out the pasuk doesn't spell out which of its words is talking about the matronis and which one is talking about shirayim. The answer is amauta poistol b'hazoyis from achvas v'chomakim like this. We'll figure that we're going to assume the pasuk wants to tell us it's possible if you missed out one of the matronis because from achvas v'chomakim will be fine in other places. As the Gemara is going to say later, that we find in other places where Hazor is on the active. We find by the Torah Adruma, we find by the Masurda, where the Torah tells us the Kohen needs to do a certain number of sprinklings, and if he doesn't, then it's possible. Therefore, it's more logical to assume the same thing over here, the sprinklings on the active. On the other hand, we're going to say that if you missed out smicho, you missed out shirayim, then the Kohen is kosher, chain ma'akas b'chol makom, because you never find anywhere else that those things on the active. So logically, therefore, you'll say
we
that.
We'll go by logic.
Yeah. To say that matonis possible, we find that in other places. We never find that shirayim on master. Tosfos brings up a point. Again, we said on Amud Aleph with a long Tosfos over there that discusses that according to Rabbi Nachman, Reb Nechemya might hold that the shirayim achasonim on master. Maybe Takadat Tana would disagree with the limud over here from Benislah. He would say, in fact, that the Shirayim are massive. He would say, that he would say that you do find other places. The Shiraim are ma'akir, therefore the ma'akir is a fuel, so he wouldn't learn from a nisbah. Mm-hmm. But everybody else would. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem. We learned the Braisa. Now in the Gemara tomorrow, we'll continue. We'll analyze the Braisa and figure out again what the Braisa means when it's saying that every one of the matonis is ma'akir. Which is why we brought in the Braisa. We have to analyze the logic of the Braisa, how it derives this idea that all of the matonis are ma'akir. By Chassar, that means. So that will leave for tomorrow, Beis Hashem.